But grandma's balls.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Chicago loved Justin Fields, and we were sad to see him go.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
We're very excited about Caleb Williams, but I want to say wholeheartedly that
the Rich Eisen Show,
Justin Fields caught the heart of Chicago, and I don't think he got a fair shot.
Earlier on the show, Atlanta Falcons CEO Rich McKay. Coming up, senior writer for Sports Illustrated Chris Mannix. WWE superstar Paul Heyman. Texas defensive tackle Devontae Sweat. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Great chat just last hour with the head of the competition committee in the NFL about all the rules changes that got voted in and some that did not. Rich McKay, if you missed some of that, don't worry. We re-air after this show is over. Plus, we'll later on this hour kind of give you a little bit of a Cliff Notes version of what he had to say. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Joining us here in studio, the senior NBA writer from Sports Illustrated, also boxing maven from DAZN, our friend Chris Mannix is back here on the show. Good to see you, Chris. How
are
you?
Good to see you, Rich. I'm good.
All right, so last year, you were the Lakers seer.
Yes.
You were seeing the Lakers go on a run that nobody else saw them potentially going on.
Prescient.
And you saw it. Deep into the early in the season, I guess.
Nostromanix.
Nostromanix. I like it. We should make that gear, Nostromanix. So you said you hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Last night, four in a row now, without LeBron, two 19-point comebacks, double overtime in Milwaukee. You're seeing anything yet? What are you seeing? You seeing something yet?
6-4 without LeBron is a remarkable number for the Lakers. And last night's game was awesome, right?
It was fun, man. That was a blast to watch.
You know, I wouldn't blame a lot of people if they turned the game off at the end of the third quarter. Lakers were down. They go on a 27-14 run in the fourth to force the overtime. AD, great. Reeves made shots. Russell made threes. It was incredible to watch. And it was as much an indictment of what Milwaukee's doing as it was praiseworthy for the Lakers. But I still can't get behind them like I did last year. You look at these last four games, and their defensive rating over the last four games is top three in the NBA. That's great. That's conference finals level. That's the Lakers of last year.
Yes, sir.
Level. But if you look at the totality, say since the All-Star break, they're 26th in defensive efficiency since the All-Star break. That's not going to win you a first-round series. That might not even get you out of the play-in tournament. So I still can't predict which version of the Lakers is going to show up defensively, because defensively is where it gets done in the playoffs. They didn't advance the conference finals last year because they had some electric offense. They advanced because they were elite defensively. If they can get back to that, they've got a shot at duplicating last year's success. If they can't, if they're more like the team we've seen for most of the season, they're going to have a hard time just getting into the postseason.
Well, they kind of did it last night, right? I mean, I think the score at the end of regulation was 101-101, which sometimes is a third quarter score.
It was a fun game.
Right.
It was a brutal game in some ways, too. I mean, the Lakers got to think 11 points off their bench. I mean, AD had 30-something. Russell Reeves had a bunch. Spencer Dinwiddie was like 1-for-8 from the floor. Like, it wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game.
Right.
But that's the kind of game the Lakers have to win. They've got to grind out wins against these other upper-tier teams.
But I think we're out of the woods in terms of them somehow, like, say, Houston catching them, right? I mean, you're out of the woods now in terms of, like, we're going to see them play in at the very least.
I believe so. I think the biggest threat to Houston's biggest opportunity is going to be Golden State, right? Because the Warriors are not playing well. And Houston, remarkably, since Alperen Sengun, you know, arguably their best player, went down, has just taken off. Jalen Green's numbers since Sengun went out have been off the charts. So because they play so well at home and because Jalen Green is playing so well right now, you have to give the Rockets a decent chance of catching up to Golden State.
Right. And then I mean, we'll talk about Golden State in a second, though. But I do want to pull on the string that you kind of left out there about this being as much of an indictment on what's going on with the Doc Rivers-coached Milwaukee Bucks. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, they've just been so uneven. They have had some great performances, some great stretches where they have played elite defense, and then they have had these stumbles where they're getting beat by teams they should beat, which includes the Lakers. I mean, that's a game they should have won last night. The consistency from the Bucks just isn't there. And I know Doc Rivers is doing everything he can to get them on the same page, especially defensively. I wrote about them in the magazine this month. I mean, they have pared down everything they're doing. They have simplified everything. What they do defensively, it's all one basic system. What they do offensively, whole bunch of pick and roll for Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So they are doing the right things, but it's so hard to get everybody on the same page when you introduce a new coach with new philosophies at the midseason point of the year. So what we're seeing is not great for Milwaukee, but it's not all that surprising either.
So by the end of the year, I guess you're saying, would 2020 hindsight, the Bucks should have hired Doc from jump? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that went into the hiring of Adrian Griffin. Number one, we have to remember that Griff was a deserving coach to get that job. He had been an assistant coach for a number of years. He had been an assistant coach under Nick Nurse, who, you know, won a championship. I mean, Adrian Griffin paid his dues to get that job. And Giannis, when he met with him, was connected. There was a connection between Giannis and Griff, and that played a big role in that team hiring Griff. But when you look back at it, the idea of bringing in a coach with no resume, at least as a head coach, to run a team with a championship window that's really only 3 years wide, right? You've got Giannis, Dame, Chris Middleton. There's like a three-year championship window. They should have brought in a more established coach, a more accomplished coach. And even though Doc Rivers fizzled out in Philadelphia, didn't end well for him with the 76ers, he makes a lot more sense for Milwaukee, given where it is, than Adrian Griffin did.
Chris Mannix here from Sports Illustrated on the Rich Eisen Show. What ails the Warriors, and is it fixable?
Shot making. It's the biggest problem right now.
With Steph Curry on the team, man. Well, I mean, you'd never say that about Steph and Clay.
The problem isn't Steph. The problem is in the non-Steph Curry minutes, which have been problematic for the Lakers for a number of years. But in those non-Steph Curry minutes, they're not getting anybody to step up. I mean, look at that game they played against Minnesota the other night, where they had a lead going into the fourth quarter. Steph goes out, sits for a while because Steve Kerr didn't like playing him too many minutes after he played 35 in the previous game. They just got run over. You know, it went from, I think, a one-point lead to an eight-point hole they were in before Steph got back in the lineup. We know that Klay Thompson is not the player he used to be. He has taken a step back. Age has caught up with him a little bit. Andrew Wiggins has been wildly inconsistent all season long. He's been a disappointment for that team. Kuminga's been good, but he's not ready to take on that type of responsibility. They just don't have consistent shot makers, bucket getters that you can rely on to score in the fourth quarter of games. And across the league, Rich, everybody's got them. Everybody's got two or three different guys that they can count on to make a shot. Even Minnesota, with Karl-Anthony Towns out, has got bucket getters that they can go to, whether it is Edwards, Mike Conley. Those guys made shots against the Warriors in that game. The Warriors just don't have that extra option to go to when Steph is either off the floor or if defenses are loading up on him.
So they don't. It's not fixable, what you're saying.
I don't see it. I mean, they're not on a good trajectory right now, and I don't see how, with this current roster, they're going to reverse that. Like, if you get them in the play-in, so many experienced guys there, anything can happen. But that play-in, like, the play-in tournament, it right now looks like Adam Silver's fever dream, right? Like, it's because you've got the play-in tournament.
Warriors and Lakers.
Warriors, Lakers, yeah. Suns with yes. Kevin Durant in that mix. Like, if you're Silver, and I'm just guessing that the NBA in the next television deal is going to parse this out. It's going to say, like, the play-in tournament is something separate. We're going to sell this to whomever. The year before they're doing that, if you get those three teams in that play-in tournament, the rating is going to be through the roof, no matter what. Mm-hmm. So this you know, I'm sure the Lakers, Warriors, Suns want to be better, but for Adam Silver, this is exactly what they're looking for.
Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. So in the same way that the fact that Durant, Curry, and LeBron, and Anthony Davis, and all those stars could be in the play-in tournament, in the West being Adam Silver's fever dream, I guess the nightmare is the way most of us learn that Michael Porter Jr. has a brother in the league this week, to be very honest. So what is going on with Jonte Porter? What happened and what is happening?
Well, the NBA is investigating what happened. So to sum it up, what happened is there were some unusual betting being done on Jonte Porter prop bets, specifically two games, one in January and one just this past week, where there was an unusual amount of betting on Jonte Porter's under numbers, under points, under rebounds, under three-pointers made. In both those games, Jonte Porter played but left the game early. In the January game, it was because of an alleged eye injury. In the March game, it was because of an illness. That immediately set up red flags from both the gambling companies and within the NBA, which spends a lot of money to track this type of stuff. So the NBA is currently investigating that. Let me couch this by saying, if it's true, right? We don't know if it's true yet. If this is all just an allegation right now. But if it's true, this is an existential threat to the NBA. This is the biggest threat to the integrity of the game since the Tim Donaghy scandal of 2007. Because you have a player who is allegedly manipulating the outcome of the game, manipulating what is happening during the game. Now, you can sit back and say, well, it's Jonte Porter. He plays 15 minutes a game. These things happen in the first half. What's the big deal? It doesn't matter. If you are intentionally manipulating how anything to do with the game, that is a threat to the NBA. Because first, it's Jonte Porter. Maybe down the line, it could be somewhere else. So how the NBA handles this is going to be closely monitored, because this is a enormous threat to the integrity of the game.
Well, exactly. Because of perception as well. I mean, the NBA already has, because of Tim Donaghy, a major perception problem. And I think some of the players are either playing into that to try and get the goat of some of the officials, right? What the money sign was given from.
And then that's the NBA hate. That's why Rudy Gobert got slapped. The NBA considered suspending Rudy Gobert for that. And they hit him with the biggest fine they could possibly hit him with. I think it was $100,000 for that. So the NBA is very cognizant and very aware of how that is perceived by the public. That's why with Jonte Porter, if any of this is true, he's done. I think he will be banned from the NBA for life. And even if he wasn't rich, I've talked to a lot of NBA executives and coaches about this in the last 48 hours. Nobody's touching him. Like, if it's true, how do you bring a guy like that into the locker room? How do you bring a guy that you might always be looking at funny if he goes 1-for-6? Or if you put him in the game in an end-of-game situation, are you going to be 100% certain that he's playing with the right intentions? If any of this is true, it's going to be impossible for Jonte Porter to ever play in the NBA again.
And I'm sure the NBA has the same setup as the NFL, which is they're monitoring, they speak to these gambling sites all the time. They monitor IP addresses. They get the information from them, and it's kind of wild. You're already seeing today, I believe, the president of the NCAA, Charlie Baker, says he wants to remove prop betting from college sports entirely. Because, I mean, if an NBA player is deciding I can make some extra scratch doing this, or maybe more than what his salary is, that's why I'm trying to even wonder what the finances
salary
would be.
Jonte Porter's salary is $415,000, a two-way player. So it's not a super highly paid player, though. Right. I think people listening would say $415,000 is pretty good money to play professional basketball.
Right.
The NBA will tell you that their system worked, right? Like, they monitor this stuff. Two games, they figured it out, and now they're investigating what happened. And so the NBA will tell you that the safeguards they have in place worked for a situation like this. But nobody knows if this is the only guy doing this stuff. Now, the questions the NBA are asking right now, are asking the Toronto Raptors specifically, are, it's really just one question. Like, did Jonte Porter ask out of those games, or did the team pull him out of those games? Because, you know, if the team pulled him, that's one thing. If Jonte Porter says, my eye is still injured, I can't play anymore, or I'm sick and I can't play anymore, that's a pretty damning indictment of what happened there. So we're going to learn a lot more in the next couple of games, but that's the question, or among the questions the NBA is asking right now. How is it that Jonte Porter came out of these games before his numbers could even approach the overs on these prop bets?
Yeah, and the two reasons why he left those games, you can't have an MRI take a look at it. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, my eye's bothering me, I'm feeling sick.
Back injury would be another one. Little things that you can't do. But this is Adam Silver, as you know, Rich, embraced sports gambling before anybody did. In 2014, he wrote an op-ed for the New York Times saying, we need to open the doors, legalize and regulate sports gambling. He was at the forefront of all this when it comes to the four major sports. And it's paid off exponentially for the NBA. I think they're going to rake in something like $167 million this year in gambling revenue alone. Mm-hmm. This is the downside. And we saw a little bit of a trickle of it earlier this month when you had Tyrese Halliburton say, people are looking at me as a prop bet, not as a player. You had J.B. Bickerstaff.
Yeah, what a quote this was.
Saying that he is getting phone calls from angry gamblers who are upset over whatever happened during game. Now you have, allegedly, a player who has manipulated the game to win prop bets. This is, you saw the upside. The upside the NBA's experienced. You got FanDuel slapped on every broadcast. Every team regionally has a local gambling company that they work with.
In the stadium. In the arena. People are betting, in arenas.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you can do it in any legal state, you can do it in an arena, pick up your phone. And I'll be honest, I do it. Like, not so much at basketball, but, like, say hockey, for example. Yes. I don't know anything about hockey, right? Like, but I like going to hockey games because they're a lot of fun.
Sure.
If I have an opportunity in Massachusetts to throw, like, $20 on the Bruins outscoring the Capitals in the third period, yeah, it's going to make my
third period viewing,
it's going to make it more fun. I get that part of it. But the NBA's got to figure out how to handle this better moving forward, because they have fully embraced the sports gambling world. And this is the downside of it, where you have Halliburton, Bickerstaff, and now the Porter situation, which nobody I talk to in the NBA, amongst teams, believes is the end of it. Like, this is not something that, all right, we did, it happened, it's over. This could just be the tip of the iceberg for the NBA.
Well, I mean, it's not just the NBA, too. It's the NFL. I mean, Major League Baseball right now is wondering what Shohei Ohtani was up to, or what his interpreter was up to.
It's crazy how this all is happening in a one-month period.
Right, and I'm sure you're seeing the conversation on their network on the DraftKings set. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's in business with everybody. The same thing with the NFL. I mean, we have, you know, the NFL has, I think, three different official gambling partners. And the NFL relaxed the rules a little bit on what players are allowed to do on that front in the last couple of months.
Well, that should change. Like, I know I was reading the Ohtani stuff. Like, apparently players in baseball can bet on other sports. I don't think they can do that in the NBA. I don't think you can bet. I don't know for sure, but I don't think you can bet on everything or anything really in the NBA. But this Porter situation, I mean, I use the phrase existential threat because that's what it is. It's they're almost fortunate that it happened to a player the level of Jonte Porter, because I believe, and again, this is just conjecture, but I believe they're going to make an example out of him. I believe that if this turns out to be true, they are going to come down on him with the harshest possible punishment and hold him up as an example to say, look, if you do anything like this, this is what happens. The basketball death penalty happens. So if you do it, it better be worth it, because if we catch you, you're done.
A few minutes left here with Chris Mannix inside the Rich Eisen Show studio here. Okay, let's put your DAZN hat on and the boxing gloves on, if you don't mind.
You're not even going to do that. I know where you're going with this.
Okay. We're seeing Mike Tyson videos, all right? Him working out, getting ready for Jake Paul.
Crazy.
And, you know, looks pretty good. You know, we have something called high register here on the Rich Eisen Show. You got to go high register to believe what you're saying, but I mean, he looks pretty good. Looks pretty good, Chris.
Look
what we got going on here.
What's the duration of these Instagram videos?
15, 20 seconds.
Okay. 15, 20. You know, a fight is theoretically 24 minutes long if it's eight rounds.
I mean, I've seen plenty of Mike Tyson fights that were only 30 seconds.
True. Decade did you see those in?
Not this one.
Or the last one? Or even the one before that?
I'm just saying. Just see
that. Okay. I mean.
Sure. Okay. Well, I mean, look at him. He's moving. He's gotten his.
Netflix just loves you.
Netflix. Come on. I don't want to get hit by that.
All right. So you have the floor, Chris. What do you think?
I stand by my predictions. Is going to be the most watched boxing event in decades.
Yes.
That's for sure. I don't believe Mike Tyson is going to win. I don't know what the rules are going to be yet. Nobody does. We're still in that weird gray area where the state of Texas has not weighed in on what the rules they're going to allow the rules to be. I would imagine they're not going to sanction this as a fight because Mike Tyson is 7.5 years away from being a senior citizen. So I'm just going to...
He does have his ARP card by now, I believe.
Yes. He's got that. Social Security is coming Mike's way in 7.5 years. So I don't know what the rules are going to be. That being said, Mike Tyson's not beating Jake Paul. Like, he's not knocking him out based on 15 to 20 seconds of an Instagram video. Like, that's not happening. He's just not doing it.
So what are the rules that you think would be beneficial to Mike?
Shorter rounds, two-minute rounds, I think would be beneficial, and shorter total rounds. So if you were Mike Tyson, your dream scenario is probably, you got to go at least six rounds to make it worth it for the viewers, because you don't want to do 4 2-minute rounds. That doesn't make any sense. But six rounds, two-minute rounds, and as small of a glove as they'll legally let you wear. Because Mike Tyson, even at 58, has better one-punch power than Jake Paul does.
That's Chris's point. TJ's point. Our point. It's like, it's just, I mean, the name of the game we used to play all the time was Mike Tyson Punch-Out, sir.
Yes.
You know, and that's the same Mike Tyson.
What decade did that come out?
When I used to play video games in an arcade, and I used to get credits for good grades when I walked into said arcade with my report card.
Okay. So in that scenario.
And I'm 54.
If Jake Paul stands there and lets Mike Tyson wail away him like it's power slap, if he stands there and lets him level him, then yes, Mike Tyson can win by knockout. If it is a 5 or 6 round fight, Jake Paul's going to win, and it could look kind of goofy in the process.
When does Texas have to weigh in on this?
I don't know. I haven't. It's next on my to-do list is to check in with, because Jake Paul's promotional company is running this. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, Texas is not, they have not spoken to Texas, and Texas has not advised them on what kind of fight it's going to be. I know there's not going to be headgear. That was made clear to me at the very beginning. So that takes one, you know, the exhibition aspect of it kind of off the table. But what kind of machinations they try to make it as real as possible, I don't know the answer to that yet.
I mean, just imagine when he's walking in, when Tyson walks in, you don't think there'll be a split second in your mind, Chris Mannix, of like, maybe. Like, it won't flash in your mind.
Of course there will be, because there could be 50,000 fans in that building.
Yeah.
And the music will come down, the DMX song will come on, and Tyson will probably walk out with that cutoff towel that he put around his neck. And of course, in that moment, you will believe that you have been transported back to 1988, and Mike Tyson is the guy that you remember. But then the bell will ring, 30 seconds will pass, and you'll remember that Social Security is coming Mike Tyson's way.
Or he's going to walk out left hook and it's over.
Netflix loves you guys.
Come on.
I mean, you guys might as well put the show on Netflix that week. I mean this,
Chris,
is,
you know, nostalgia.
You'll
is
be
the
Radio
most,
Row from
nostalgia is the most powerful drug, and we're snorting it like crazy.
I
right
mean,
now with
it, Rich, isn't that training camps are open then? In
what day
was it? July?
Again?
No, maybe not.
July 20th.
Not
it's a week.
July 20th
before,
is week before. It's training, a perfect. Right. It's a perfect time. So it'll be just as the post All-Star break, baseball is hitting.
Oh, they're smart like that.
Yeah, and training camps are just about to open. And like we'll be hungry for this.
Take it a step further. Yeah. Summer league is over at that point, so the NBA is completely off the grid.
There you go.
The signing period for NBA. There's almost nothing but regular season baseball going on that day. That day. And you can. That's not a competitor for you if you're Netflix.
That's it. All
you
right.
You should take the show.
Let's take the show.
I mean, it's
we'll stay
worst,
for Cowboys training camp when it opens up. I mean,
well, it's actually, that's out here in California.
Oh, it's out here. It's right too.
Yeah.
A little hot in Texas.
That's fine. Well, we'll consider it. We'll talk to Roku about this sort of thing. Can you bring a show for days for a fight that might last for 2 minutes? Like, what would be the ratio of show minutes to event minutes?
But think about
it would be crazy.
Think about the appetite.
2001.
The appetite's going to be huge for it. Like, the appetite already is huge for it.
We're talking about it.
You guys are frothing over here at the idea of this fight being.
I am refreshing Mike's IG, like, all day. Just, I want a new update. I want a new video. He's, like, talking smack back. He's like, day three, you want some of this? I'm like, yes. I want all of it.
So does Jake Paul, I bet, too.
For the record, I'm not thrilled about this.
What do you mean?
It just doesn't sit right with me. The fact that there's a chance that Mike Tyson could lose to Jake Paul in a boxing match just doesn't sit well with me. And
it's not like Mike's undefeated. He's lost before.
But you lose. Losing to Kevin McBride is different than losing to Jake Paul. Yeah. Like, that to me, and I don't think it'll happen because even in the middle of this fight, if Jake realizes that he's just better, right? He's 27 years old. Like, if Jake realizes that he can handle Mike, Jake's not going to try to knock out Mike Tyson. Like, he's not. He's not. Kevin McBride in Mike Tyson's last official fight was going for it. Like, he's like, this is my chance for anybody to remember who I am. Right. So he went for it in that fight. Jake Paul, I don't believe, is going to be out for blood against Mike Tyson.
Just know this, Chris Mannix. You're kind enough to say, you know, hey, I'm in LA. Let me know if you're up for, you know, hanging out. Next time you do that, and next time we're going to talk about this again.
I have no doubt, Rich.
And I want updates. We want to know. We want to know what's going on.
As soon as I hear about the rules from the Texas Commission, you'll be my first text.
Yes.
There you go. Thank you, Chris.
I'll call
Mannix.
In. If it's between 9 and 12 Pacific time, I will call in.
We will accept said call.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. Great to see you. Thanks for being here. We're back with your phone calls and set up our third hour. Paul Heyman zooming into the program in the third hour.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Ever meet Ali?
Yeah.
What was that like?
I was 1978 or 77. I'm locked up in Spofford Juvenile Detention Center. And all of a sudden, we come down, we watch the movie The Graded. And then next thing, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, Ali walks in.
Into your detention center?
Yes.
What was that like?
Pandemonium. And I was only 11. Maybe I didn't really understand. I heard my mother mention called him Clay around the house.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't know who he was. As time going, I found out who he was from the show, of course. And that was good inspiration. After that, I got transferred to another place where it was a gentleman, Bobby Stewart, who was a former fighter who started teaching me how to fight. And then he introduced me to the legendary trainer, Customato. And then I saw Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard fight. And I wasn't sure what I was going to be a fight. I was just happy to get out of that place.
Sure.
But when I saw them fight, I knew, ooh, that's what I want to do in my life.
That's what, when you saw Duran and Sugar Ray fight, that's when you said, that's what I want to do. How do you get into the mindset to go ahead and knock somebody like Marvis Frazier out in 30 seconds?
You know,
Robert Coley in 37 seconds.
It doesn't happen overnight. It happens when you're a kid, and you have to be that person before you become that person.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? I think I know what you mean, but I'd love to.
It's a lifestyle. You have to live that lifestyle. At a young age, I just lived that lifestyle. Never had girlfriend. I trained all day. I watched fight films all day. I read fight magazines all day. Every conversation I had with somebody was about fighters. Who you think would have won this and that? Just like guys that love basketball or baseball. Who you think would have won? Who you think is the best? Kareem or Oscar Robertson? Or sure. Who you think is the best? That's all I was. You think you could be him? You thought you'd be him? Match the guys with the past, with the guys with the present, and this and that. And that's all I thought about.
That was Mike Tyson in 2015. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Darren in Alaska has been holding on for a while. What's up, Darren? How are you, sir?
Hey, Rich. I'm doing good. Up here avoiding getting stomped by moose and eaten by brown bears.
In that order?
Actually, moose are probably more dangerous.
Understood. So. Understood. Chris, is that? Can you confirm that from your
yeah.
time living in
yeah,
Alaska?
Accurate. Accurate.
What's on your mind?
Well, actually, I'm a big supporter of the rule change that you talked about, you know, it's just ridiculous that the ball gets fumbled into the end zone and out. But it was a thought process I've never heard anyone talk about that actually bothers me. And it actually probably happens in almost every game. And that is the chain gang. You know, basically with the chain gang, you know, measuring for 10 yards, you know, they just eyeball it when they set it, okay, which they could be off a couple inches. They could be off a centimeter, whatever. And then, you know, they have this big expressive thing. They're going to pull it out to see if they actually made the first down. I mean, it's ridiculous because it's so arbitrary when they set it to begin with. And then whether you're short or not on fourth down is to me is just ridiculous.
Oh, I'm with you, Darren. You know, and I appreciate you agreeing with me on the rule. And I thought that was an enlightening conversation with Rich McKay earlier on in this program. And
yes, absolutely.
Thanks for the call, Darren. Call back and stay away from the moose and what was it?
Brown bear.
Brown bears. In that order.
Brown bear. Yeah.
I found it interesting that Rich McKay said that they are going to have the officials when they make an announcement and if a flag is being picked up after further conversation with replay assist, you're going to hear it. And I know that still won't be enough transparency for some fans who think that their team is going to be wronged by an official that they don't see. In a replay process that you don't see. And I know I think if Del Tufo was here, he would tell you what the XFL takes you into the process and you actually hear the communication between, between the officials in the booth. You would hear Pereira talking with the officiating or you would hear the actual conversation. I don't think you'll ever see that sort of transparency. But it again, I can't tell people enough. There is no 100%, there's no way there's an official that's making a decision because he or she have money on it or that he or she, have some sort of personal vendetta against your team or knows who you're betting on. Nobody does. Now, I understand you might even be sitting there saying, Chris, well, couldn't you said that about Tim Donaghy? Is there some bad lieutenant apple that's out there? I guess I shouldn't say 100%. But the NFL vets, I bet you they see like financial transactions and anything. They will make sure that this is not coming home to roost in their league.
Kind of have to now.
And in terms of the eye in the sky, that Rich McKay, the chairman of the competition committee, basically said, because I think there's, there are some teams that would love to have the eye in the sky in the same way the XFL does, I guess, that has the eye in the sky officiate the game. I don't think that'll ever happen in the NFL. I don't think you will ever see.
Just where everything is.
Where everything is officiated from replay assist. And I guess they wouldn't call it replay assist anymore because it's not assisting anything. They would be running everything in terms of officiating. I don't think they'll ever do that. And I don't think they'll ever have replay assist put a flag on the field. They'll have one that's already been thrown by a human being picked up because they see something that he says is completely objective, not subjective. And what that means is just like if it's a toe on the line, that's objective. If it's somebody that grabbed the inside of a jersey that might be considered holding, that's subjective. They'll never make that available for replay because they did that for instant replay. They did that for pass interference a few years ago, reactionary to what happened in that NFC Championship game that was so terrible, such a blown call. That was a disaster. You'll never see that again. And I kind of agree with that approach of having the human beings on the field call and officiate the game and the instant replay chime in when something objective can be called. I kind of agree with that. And that if something objective can help pick up a flag, that should be used, not something objective that something was missed by the human beings, place a flag on the field. Would you agree with that? Or you want to see replay assist, place a flag on the field. You missed that intentional grounding. We can see it on replay. Thus, we're now chiming in and we're throwing a flag on the play. And there would be a way for you to have that indicated how by...
You got to challenge it.
Well, no. What I'm saying is it wouldn't be challenged. Mm. The instant replay would buzz in like they do in the last 2 minutes of a game and say, stop play, we're taking a look at something to throw a flag on the field. I think that would be just completely rejected by NFL fans.
I mean, we clearly saw Justin Herbert get blown up while he was out of bounds. No call on that. I mean, that's a huge play in that Charger game. So I do see some benefits to that.
Yeah. Because something objective as and
clear
by the way,
and obvious, quote unquote, clear and obvious.
By the way, that is something that Rich McKay did not, I didn't bring up with Rich, is that the replay assist is going to chime in to say, pick up that flag on, as he mentioned, intentional grounding, on roughing the passer, but where they could say, hey, you threw the flag because you thought the guy got hit in the head, neck, and upper chest area, and he didn't.
Well, I think we can agree that's going to be an improvement. There are way too many
of
those
doubt.
Calls.
But the other one that they are going to use replay assist on is throwing flags for late hit out of bounds. That they say, pick it up. Guy was in the field of play. That should not be a flag. They're never going to buzz in and say, you missed it. Because that, I think, opens up way too much of an avenue. The league just will never go in that direction. And I don't think fans will want it. You know, I don't think fans would want to have the play stopped when you're ready to see the next play is coming. And
for what, holding or something?
Right.
Or?
For but buzzing down, sorry, you know, our humans missed it, so we're buzzing down. And then it'll be like, well, why didn't you buzz down the last time? Well, it wasn't just as bad. Holding is holding. Just because it's so obvious that you're going to call it with the replay assist here, yeah, or sky judge. I don't know. That's why.
Would they be parsing that out in slow motion or in game speed? Because but those are two different things and they look two different ways.
The number of times when sometimes I get caught up in this, clearly, when football season is deep into it, right? Deep into it, you're in week 7, 8, or 9, and I'm watching Major League Baseball playoffs. Mm-hmm. Somebody hits a home run. I will literally sometimes, just because I'm, you know, so deep in the football season and I'm whacked out, I'm tired or whatever, I will think for a split second, is that home run going to count or is there a penalty on the play?
Right.
Can you imagine?
I feel you.
Home run leaves the yard, touch them all. Wait a minute. There was a flag because there was a balk before the pitch and we didn't call it, but replay assist is now, you missed the balk. You know what I mean? Like that's the sort. Now, that's an extreme, but it's using a sport that doesn't have these issues. But it's the same way as the plays just counted.
Well, the Kelce play, I mean, front and center. One of the coolest plays of last year's football season. Didn't count.
After,
guy lines up offside.
And for a penalty that's rarely seen.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I don't think we'll ever see replay assist become sky judge. But what I would love for them to do is expand the concept of what's objective and for the folks in the competition committee and the ownership, the membership, they think maybe it's a bridge too far to then throw all 15-yard penalties, roughing calls, unsportsmanlike roughing calls into the hopper of replay assist. Because the number of times you'll see defender hit a receiver in a way that looks violent and they flag it, and after further review, that play, that's a heck of a form tackle. I'd love to see that flag picked up too. But now you're getting into the gray area of what a defenseless receiver is concerned, and they don't want to open up that. And I'm basically saying, let's figure out how to open the door. Because these 15-yard penalties that are getting flagged by NFL officials out of the concept that they are the first line of defense for the player safety rules of the National Football League.
Some of them are ridiculous.
And some of them get thrown, and you are like, come on.
Yeah.
You are like,
come
on.
There's at least a few a game.
And there are sometimes with replay assists, you should be able to pick up the come on flags. I'd love to see it. But as you heard, you know, when they were saying that, as Rich was saying, when it comes to telling the Eagles that their concept of replacing the onside kick with a one-shot, 4th-and-20 type play, if you convert that, you get to keep possession, and that he kind of likes that idea, and the other people on the competition committee that liked that idea, they had a table pushing for it because they needed to use all of their energies on the kickoff rule.
I mean,
there's captains of industry in that room. Yeah. They can't walk and chew gum at the same time. And the answer basically came back that in terms of changing a rule when it goes against some concept of tradition, that, yeah, you can only focus on one. Like, they only have the capacity to change one of those rules at a time.
It seems like that's going to happen, though.
The fourth and 20?
Yeah, a play for an onside kick.
Well, when we have another conversation with Rich or Troy Vincent, the head of football ops, or anybody from the competition committee, again, the issue, we'll revisit that. The issue there is, what if there's a defensive penalty? And as he said, that right now the onside kick works 13% of the time. It's dropped down to 5%. That's an issue. They'd like to reconfigure that, but they don't want that figure to go up because, as he said, there is a benefit to, you know, leading a football game.
Yes, but you can do the metrics on what the conversion rate is for 4th and whatever.
Maybe.
And you can get that yardage and the number to be less than 13%.
Well, they can figure that out. They can. Let's take a break. I got a top 5 list that I think everyone's going to enjoy. That's the tease. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Back here on our show, here on the Roku channel. So have we heard from Mike Del Tufo at all? We heard from him at all?
We had a little group chat going this morning.
Jason, not to put you in a position, but...
Oh boy.
Too late.
Uh-oh.
What does happen with a setup that requires a 3-day window to set up?
I mean, I'm no expert, but a lot of times he's checking in on site.
Got it.
Making sure they can hear each other.
Okay. Right.
That's all I got.
Okay, so that sounds like a 2-minute process.
Okay.
You're stupid, Mike.
See, when I talk about stuff and Brockman doesn't make eye contact with me, and he's a masshole who does not mind awkwardness or confrontation.
Not at all.
But when he just, like, the look right there, just don't move, Chris. If you can take that shot, I can see that shot. I know I'm nearing a third rail.
Can I speak?
Yes. What does that mean? Can I speak?
No, I don't know. Look, but thing is, like, you know how sensitive Mike is. Like, yesterday, he's talking about this 25-page packet that he's got.
Yeah, he calls it an audio book, which is which is only about audio. That's what he said.
Like,
I just love that.
I know, but he was dealing with something yesterday, and he was just like, these guys, like,
Careful. I'm the GOAT. They're lucky that I'm around because, man, I fix everything. And there's so much going on.
We are lucky that he's around here.
And, he, you know, he was kind of, I don't know if he was MFing the people at the UFL or whatever, but he was just like, what's going on? I mean, these guys, they don't know what they're doing. Just like, whoa, okay.
Well, to be fair, I was on standby for today. So he was trying to be here.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Sure, okay. But you're here.
I'm here.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show, Game Time Tickets. Get the app on your phone. Certainly as it's time for Major League Baseball season because Game Time's now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball. Makes getting tickets even faster and easier. And here's the great part about it. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch. And when you can just check out where the seats, how the field looks from the seats and your view from the seats, there's a feature that makes it so much easier for you to buy that ticket. And then you get the all-in prices on top of it. And then there's my promo code. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code RICH. You get $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create an account. Redeem the code RICH, $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Boom!
I used the Game Time app on Saturday to get the Clippers Sixers.
Attaboy.
I'm using Game Time in 2 weeks. Red Sox down
in
Anaheim.
Look at you guys.
Let's go.
Look at you guys. So, hey, listen, everybody. Ian Rappaport let everyone know yesterday, according to his reporting, the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, as of right now, there's no deep conversations about extending his contract. And you can't franchise tag him. And there's a no-trade clause, which means the Cowboys want him to play out his contract. And he's going to play out his contract. Unless there is some sort of reversal. Now, can they make some sort of deal between now and the playing season? Absolutely, of course. If they don't, would that be totally nuts? Absolutely, of course. I think so. So, as of right now, as of this very moment, Dak Prescott will be allowed to hit free agency next year. So there's no time like the present for a top five. Hit it.
High five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Rich's top five.
Yes, indeed. Top five teams that probably will be in on Dak in 2025. Yes, TJ, we're going here. Why not?
Yes.
Number five on this list.
Yes.
And of course, some teams might get a quarterback in the draft.
Maybe.
Which means this is totally premature. Yay. Completely insane to do this right now.
Yeah, it seems
too bad.
Early.
Too bad. Who Number knows? Five on this list, the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh.
Geno Smith, next year, his dead cap, if they decide not to have him anymore, $13 million. You know what that is? That's chump change in the National Football League. So if they don't get a quarterback now, and Sam Howell doesn't so seem to fit, maybe they go get Dak. Stick him up there in the Pacific Northwest and let him just, you know, cook. Let Dak cook up there. Why not? That's number five. Number four on this list. Let's say this team doesn't get a quarterback in the draft. And it's entirely possible that everybody's gone by the time that they draft. And they're not going to go ahead and push somebody up the board for a 13th overall pick. What about the Las Vegas Raiders being in on Dak? Why not? Aiden O'Connell right now is their starting quarterback. And if they don't go ahead and get, you know, I know it's what the Gardner's out there, right?
Gardner's
out there.
Gardner,
I know
Gardner.
They got him for 2 years, but if Aiden O'Connell's not the guy and Gardner doesn't seem to be the guy and the bridge quarterback is only there not for a new quarterback that they draft, Dak Prescott. Sitting right there. Very easy to go all in on Dak and let him finish his career out there in Las Vegas. Number three. Now, they've got a massive dead cap hit, but they're taking the lion's share of it this year. The dead cap for the Denver Broncos on Russell Wilson next year is $32 million. That's a lot. And then you add Dak on top of it. Yeah. Is it something they can handle? Absolutely.
Yeah, Walmart money.
If they don't go ahead and get a quarterback in this year's draft, they're going to go get him. I think they're in on him. Number two on this list. Name me a team for which it would be more on brand to go ahead and take somebody else's starting quarterback and then just take a massive dead cap hit of their own just because it hasn't worked out. Name me another team for whom this is on brand. The New York Jets. This is so on brand for them. I know the dead cap for Aaron Rodgers would be $49 million if he's not their starting quarterback in 2025.
That's a lot.
This is so on brand for the Jets to bring Dak. But if the Jets aren't that team,
Number one.
The guy that Brockman has been talking about has been toast there, and I heard at the combine they're done with him. The $22 million dead cap hit for this guy in 2025 makes it totally and completely understandable if they don't get a quarterback in this year's draft for the New York Giants to tell Dak Prescott, you're a Giant, you're not a Cowboy anymore. And if he does have any sense of wanting to stick it to the Jones family, that's the way to do it.
Yes.
The New York Football Giants are number one on my list. So there it goes. Seahawks, Raiders, Broncos, Jets. What a Jet thing that would be. You know, it doesn't work out for Aaron Rodgers. You know what we're going to do? We're not going to go ahead and draft another one. We're not going to do that. We're going to pay him all the dead cap because maybe he's injured and he's out. And then you got Dak as a Jet. And if not a Jet, then a Giant. Paul Heyman is in hour number three because TJ is staring a hole through me right now. I have to make him happy.
I like Dak in New York.
How about that?
Hit think we need one more?
Yes, let's do one more.
All right, we'll get one more.
Here's one more.
This is it.
This is it, man. The one more. No, the Cowboys are going to be in on him. Don't worry. They're not the one more, all right? That's so obvious. But
get your damn act together.
What happens if the guy that they went ahead and have given the job to his pole position doesn't work out? What if they get a look-see at Justin Fields all year long? And say he's not the guy, but they kind of, before this season, signed him to a little two-year deal, and they want to see how life is with Dak. Maybe the Steelers are all in, because right now, you know what their offense costs right now?
Not a lot.
Nothing. Like I don't even think it's $15 million. It's a $15 million offense right now. So they'll have enough money to give Dak a multiple of that.
Takes a nice chunk out of the pie.
I think the Steelers might be in on Dak and let him finish his career in Pittsburgh.
Interesting.
Do you see how easy it is
to manipulate stuff?
Not to manipulate, how easy it is to understand that what the Cowboys are doing right now is fire playing and totally nuts.
Yeah.
But they want to go all in on Dak. And I didn't understand this definition of all in. I didn't understand it when I heard it for the first time at the combine. I still don't understand it right now. And I think they need to be all in on talking about a conversation with Dak to extend him, because this is nuts. That's it for hour number two. Tavondre Sweat of Texas Football coming up with Paul Heyman behind him.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.